Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. We have an exciting show ahead of us. It's Friday, so Dennis Hart has a roundup of local news from the past week for you. It's the Chinese New Year. Olympic skaters are leaping and spinning, and birds are being counted all over the world for a global snapshot of the bird world. We'll wrap up the hour with a conversation with Dr. Anthony Jones, Director of Student Services for the Ames Community School District. He'll tell us about programs for students at risks, a timely subject given the recent tragedy in Parkland, Florida. So stay tuned. Lots to listen to in the next hour. Here's Dennis Hart with local news from the past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related local papers.
We begin with Tuesday's Tribune, where the big story was about students at Nevada High School and Nevada Middle School who were evacuated Monday after an email threat was received. Authorities did not specify what the nature of that threat was, but Nevada Fire Chief Ray Reynolds said the schools were evacuated out of an abundance of caution. It was later determined that the email came from an overseas account. High school students were taken to Memorial Lutheran Church in Nevada. Middle school students were taken to the GFS building, where a Nevada police vehicle was parked outside as parents gathered to pick up their children. Parents were allowed into the building in groups of 10, and no backpacks were allowed inside. All evening school activities were canceled. There was more school news in the Trib on Tuesday. The Ames School Board worked late into the evening on Monday, conducting interviews with architecture firms being considered for the district's potential project to build a new high school. But the board postponed making a recommendation on which firm to choose. Throughout the nearly seven-hour meeting, the board heard presentations by Envision, by OPN Architects, by FRK Architects and Engineers, and by Hala Architecture. As part of their presentations, firm representatives outlined their past work, design possibilities for the Ames High School project, and strategies employed. Envision highlighted its $750 million in educational construction done in the past decade. OPN Architects stressed the importance of working with stakeholders and engaging student, community, staff, faculty, and administration groups. Presenters for FRK Architects and Engineers said the firm has worked on projects for many public high schools in the past 10 years and said it would partner with the national firm Perkins & Will if selected for the project. Hala Architecture said it and the national firm Skidmore, Owings & Merrill would be paired if selected for the project. All four firms said they would be able to start on the project immediately, but the school board was not able to reach consensus on which firm to recommend. Instead, an agenda item on the topic has been added to a previously scheduled meeting at the district office today, Friday afternoon. In other news Tuesday in the Tribune, the man who was struck by a train at the South Duff Avenue crossing on Saturday night was identified as 54-year-old Joe Anthony Zavala of Mason City. Authorities said a passerby notified officers that a man was thought to have been hit by a train just before 8 p.m., Officers found the train stopped and Zavala lying unconscious south of the tracks. Zavala was taken by helicopter to a Des Moines hospital. The train was stopped on the tracks for several hours while Union Pacific conducted an investigation. Duff Avenue was shut down as well for several hours. Also in Tuesday's Trib, word that two people were hospitalized following a rural crash southwest of Huxley over the weekend. Deputies were called to the intersection of 535th Avenue and Iowa Highway 210 just after 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon with reports of a two-vehicle accident. Authorities said a Ford F-150 truck driven by 58-year-old Brian Baumgartner of rural Huxley was northbound on 535th Avenue when he failed to stop at an intersection and was struck on the driver's side by a Nissan Altima driven by 18-year-old Aubrey Mesher of Granger. Both were taken to a hospital. Their vehicles were totaled. Another story in Tuesday's Tribune involved the Ames man who police said sexually abused a minor between June 2015 and 2016. 22-year-old Chris Samart Kiochai pleaded guilty on Monday to lascivious acts with a child. He will be sentenced March 26. He was arrested last October after police said the victim, who was under the age of 12, said Kiochai had forced her to touch him inappropriately. Authorities said Kiochai admitted doing it. He could face up to 10 years in prison. Also in Tuesday's Trib, the National Weather Service wants to get a jump on spring and summer by offering storm spotter training. The class will be held at 7 o'clock next Wednesday night at the Story City Fire Station, 512 Park Avenue in Story City. Classes are free, and they usually last 1 hour to 90 minutes. Story County Emergency Management Coordinator Keith Morgan said the more people trained as storm spotters, the more likely his agency would be able to give the Weather Service information on weather at the ground level. Storm spotters can help verify what forecasters think is going on with a storm. Story County Emergency Management monitors severe weather, and when conditions are such that there might be a need to activate the severe warning sirens because of a tornado, winds greater than 70 miles an hour, or hail bigger than the size of a golf ball, emergency management officials may ask the rural fire departments to deploy as storm spotters to give real-time feedback on what's happening. Wednesday's Tribune reported that the Ames City Council moved quickly through its budget wrap-up session on Tuesday night. The council approved the proposed 2018-2019 fiscal year budget and added several projects to its current year spending. The council's proposed budget for next year is more than $234 million. It will hold its final hearing on that spending plan on March 6th. City staff recommended adding two projects to the current year spending plan. The council approved the staff recommendation to allocate $14,000 from the city's general fund money to build an entrance gate and fence at the Hunziker Youth Sports Complex. It also set aside $20,000 for welcome signage facing northbound Interstate 35 traffic as it drives into the Ames area. The council also approved Councilmember Gloria Betcher's request that the city allocate $40,000 this year to the Campus Town Action Association to use on its Make Campus Town Shine program. And the council also approved $10,000 to build a drinking fountain at Tom Evans Plaza. And there was more. The council approved allocating $15,000 from its parking fund to pay for new police department software to support Ames' new tiered parking system. That new system goes into effect July 1st. The council also decided how to use rental fees to pay for the city's new rental inspector. Two-thirds of the money will come from single-family home and duplex fees, the rest from apartment and condominium fees. Story County supervisors also had a busy day on Tuesday. The supervisors approved an agreement to fund fees paid to consultant Mission Critical Partners, which is helping the county design and procure a new land mobile radio system for public safety in the county. The current system no longer meets the requirements of its users and needs to be replaced. Each of the four parties, the county, the City of Ames, Iowa State, and Story County E911 Service Board, would pay about $34,000 for the services provided by Mission Critical Partners. Also Tuesday, the supervisors approved the purchase of a new 85-gallon water softener for the Story County Justice Center. The current water softener is not working because of a leak in the drain line that is resulting in the loss of 3 to 5 gallons of water each hour. Parts to repair the problems are obsolete. It will cost $15,000 to buy the new system and remove the old one. Also Tuesday, the supervisors heard that Story County's Conservation Board has been recognized as having the best environmental education program in the state. Conservation Board Director Mike Cox said the program's goal is to help county residents become, in his words, environmentally sensitive, knowledgeable, skilled, dedicated citizens who are willing to work toward the wise use of our natural environment. There was more in Wednesday's Tribune, including word that the Ames woman who was accused of providing a former girlfriend with the synthetic opioid U4, which resulted in her overdose and death, was sentenced to 30 days in jail. 22-year-old Sadie James Dalgleish had pleaded guilty to possession of a controlled substance in November. The incident took place in December 2016. Authorities found 25-year-old Tashera Burnside in the 200 block of Franklin Avenue. She was unresponsive and rushed to Mary Greeley Medical Center, where she was pronounced dead. When authorities spoke to Dalgleish, they said she admitted that she and Burnside had used U4 the night before. Evidence showed that Dalgleish knew that she was aware that U4 was a powerful and potentially lethal opioid. Also Wednesday, the Tribune reported that a 15-year career fair drought ended at Ames High when ninth graders were given the chance to explore careers for more than 25 different businesses. Ames High business teacher Vicki Hales organized the career fair, which included booths that students could explore and sessions led by community members in classrooms. Next year, the career fair could be expanded to include both freshmen and juniors. In Thursday's Ames Tribune, word that a lawsuit against Iowa State University, one that claims it mishandled a sexual assault case against a former student, was dismissed by the state's Southern District Court on Wednesday. The court ruled that the victim could not prove deliberate indifference or severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive discrimination. The lawsuit claimed the university took too long to review her sexual abuse complaint and did not take reasonably acceptable steps to protect her. The suit alleged that in 2014, the assailant and the woman were at a party on the ISU campus, that both consumed alcohol, that she became ill and passed out on a couch, and that when she woke up, the assailant was sexually assaulting her. 22-year-old Patrick Whetstone was arrested in 2015 and charged with third-degree sexual assault. He pleaded guilty to assault with intent to commit sexual abuse and was sentenced to 2 years probation, ordered to register with the state's sexual offender registry, and received a 10-year special sentence. In the lawsuit, the woman claimed the university said it would investigate the allegations and reach a conclusion within 60 days of the report being filed, but that ISU police allegedly chose not to investigate at that time and waited for several months. Nearly 6 months after the incident, ISU's report concluded that the university thought the evidence barely showed a sexual assault had occurred. Thursday's Tribune also reported that the Ames City Council approved a motion allowing the Main Street Cultural District to apply for a nearly $100,000 grant from the Prairie Meadows Community Betterment Grant Program. Prairie Meadows is a hotel and casino in Altoona. The money would go toward improvements at Banshell Park. Councilmember Tim Garten opposed the application, saying, in his words, the reason why Prairie Meadows does this is because they want to encourage people to be supportive of gambling activities. The council also approved 9 requests for tax exemptions in the city's urban revitalization areas. Included were requests from 3 Iowa State Greek houses, from Celebrations on South 3rd Street, and from the Sheldon Munn Building on Main Street. The council also approved a request from the owners of almost 36 acres of land at the corner of Lincoln Way and South 500th Avenue to sever their properties from the city. Also in Thursday's Trib, word that a tax reform proposal from Governor Reynolds has the potential to lower taxes for some of Story County's residents, but that the lost revenue could deepen cuts to Iowa State University and other state agencies. The governor's proposal would reduce income tax rates for all the state's tax brackets starting in the next tax year and run through 2023. The Tribune has a detailed breakdown of the tax consequences for a variety of income groups, and you can read all about it in Thursday's paper. Thursday's Tribune also had an update on the condition of the Mason City man who was struck by a train Saturday night in Ames. 54-year-old Joe Zavala was said to be exceeding all expectations, according to his daughter, Abigail Pippo. She said her dad was in Ames for the weekend to visit his son and had gotten a hotel room. She said he was walking back from eating downtown when he was struck by the train. Neither she nor Ames police know how he was hit. Zavala suffered numerous broken bones, and he has yet to communicate. Doctors said he has a long road to recovery. In this week's Nevada Journal, the Nevada City Council decided on Monday not to buy a wind turbine that sits on the water treatment plant property. The turbine has been there for more than 2 decades after the city and Story County Hospital entered an agreement to have it built. The hospital maintained it, and the city had the option of buying electricity for the wastewater treatment plant. Now the hospital no longer wants to own it. Also in the journal, Nevada High Drama students are getting set for this year's spring performance, Seussical the Musical. In this week's Boone News Republican, Boone City Council member Stephen Ray announced that he's withdrawn from the race for the Republican nomination for governor of Iowa. Ray announced his candidacy 7 months ago, but said that the support and money behind incumbent Republican Governor Kim Reynolds is too much to overcome. Ray left his 29-year career in public safety and resigned as manager of Iowa's 911 Emergency Communication Centers to pursue his candidacy. Also in the News Republican, Governor Reynolds and Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg went to the Erickson Public Library in Boone to congratulate the library for being selected for a NASA grant. Erickson was just one of 75 libraries across the nation to be selected for the grant. It will let the library increase learning opportunities in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and math. This week's News Republican also reported that residents along QF Lane near Madrid attended a public forum this week to talk about a proposed redesign of the Grant Woods Master Plan. The property includes 28 acres along QF Lane that were donated to the Boone County Conservation Board 5 years ago. Among the ideas being considered, maintaining much of the plant and wildlife that's already there, putting in more wildlife viewing areas, and installing a pumpkin patch. One plan that had been discussed was to add campsites on the property, but that generated opposition and is no longer in the works. Also in the News Republican, word that the Boone Community School District approved a dress code for students. It defines what the district calls appropriate tops and bottoms that can be worn and says no clothing can be worn that shows significant tears or holes. The board also approved a request to seek bids for a new school bus. One more note from the News Republican, the City Parks and Recreation Commission set a fee of $25 for 2 hours of time for citizens to rent the John Hansen Memorial Skating Rink. From this week's Story City Herald, word that the Roland Story School Board has approved a bid to renovate the high school science department. On Monday night, the board accepted a $444,000 bid from TBB&M of Indianola for the project. The money comes from the $9 million in general obligation bonds, which Roland Story voters approved last year. The project includes new windows, flooring, millwork, paint, and safety equipment in the high school science classrooms. It also includes new flooring, furniture, and paint in the learning coach's office. A science classroom wall will be removed, which will enlarge the science lab. The board also heard an update about another project, the improvement of the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system at the middle school and high school. Bids for that project came in over the estimated construction cost of $1.8 million. Ways to reduce the cost of the project are being explored. Also in the Herald, a shopping event will feature more than 20 direct sale vendors and other small business owners tomorrow, Saturday, and the following Saturday. Tomorrow's event will take place at Tracy Jennings Remax Real Estate Center on Broad Street in Story City. Next Saturday's event will take place in the meeting room above City Hall in the city. The event is free and open to the public. Also in the Herald, word that the Story City Greater Chamber Connection has a new executive director. Jay Wilson has been promoted to the top job from his former position as assistant director. This after Abby Huff recently announced her resignation as executive director. She's accepted a job in Cedar Rapids. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe weekend.
My name is Jing Tao Wang. I am the principal of Chinese Language Academy. Today is Chinese New Year, so we will celebrate about 15 days. We should eat a big dinner together with the whole family member, and we should have a lot of special food for tonight's dinner.
What are the favorite foods for the Chinese New Year?
So, you know, China is big. Just like America, we have a different food, but we have the common meaning in each of the food. For example, we have a rooster, and also we will have the fish, because fish is, you have some money on your bank. And then we also eat pork, beef, and we also eat orange, and the dumpling, mostly in north side of China, and another rice, is in the south of China.
I don't think that we've heard yet what year this is. This is the signs of the zodiac, right?
Yes.
The Chinese zodiac.
Yes.
And how many are there?
12.
There are 12.
My student, they will tell you what the year is this year.
Oh, right. These students are all from the Chinese language school?
Yes.
Why don't you go around the circle and give me your names?
Daniel,
okay.
Megan.
And you're Megan? And you're?
Grace.
Grace. And you're?
James.
James.
Oh, Willow.
Willow.
And Amy.
Amy.
Yeah, James, you know.
There's the rat year, and then there's the cow year, and then there's the tiger year, and then there's the rabbit year, and then there's, like, the dragon year. And then there's the snake, and then after the snake is the lamb. Horse, and then it's a monkey, and then it's the rooster, and then it's a dog and the pig.
Can I just tell you, me and James were born in the pig year, so for that, it means, like, since the pig's kind of chubby, like, it's good because you can either be, like, fat because you eat good and you're rich and stuff, and then, like, it also represents, like, money and, yeah, and luck.
Oh, so it's good to be born in the year of the pig.
Yeah.
Yes. But what's this year?
The dog.
If you're a dog, if you're born in the year of the dog, what characteristics do you have?
So you're rich and everything goes well for you if you're born in the dog year. And you have a lot of different friends and stuff because you're very friendly.
Well, you're friendly if you're in the dog year.
Willow, James, and I are all in the same class. So we all made dogs, and then we took a group photo of the dogs, yeah. And we have 13 students in my class.
I remember hearing that dumplings are a real favorite and that they're very special for what they mean. So can anybody tell me about dumplings?
You know how a dumpling's like wrapped up? It's like a person. So in the middle, yeah, they're complex, but then on the outside, they're like simple.
Grace?
I like to eat the dumpling because I normally have like 30 dumplings.
30 dumplings? How big are they? About the size of a golf ball?
A little bit bigger.
And you can eat 30? James doesn't look like he believes you. How many dumplings could you eat?
Probably 40-something.
Oh, 40. Okay. Willow, how about you?
Well, when I do eat them, I usually, like, feast. So probably, like, they're going to be, like, kind of big and, like, filled. So maybe, like, around 5.
Around 5. Mm-hmm. Even though you were born in the year of the pig, you're only going to eat 5 dumplings. And Amy, how many dumplings can you eat?
Like maybe 15.
15. Okay. Well, we have a real range here. I thought there were parades. Are there not any parades?
There are, but they're in China.
Yeah.
They're in China. Well, doesn't anybody here in Ames have a parade?
Actually, we have performance to celebrate Lunar New Year. This coming Saturday at Ames Public Library from 11 o'clock. Also, we will have a craft all about the dog. And we also have a little bit art gallery. It's all about the dog. This is tomorrow, Saturday. And then on Sunday, we will have our own celebration. By day, we will have activity. And in the night from 5 o'clock, we will combine the celebration with the Iowa State University students. And we all will go to the Memory Union and go to the Great Hall. From 6:30, we will have performance. Our Chinese Language Academy will also bring the performance to there. But pretty much everybody can go to that. And it's really fun day. You also can eat really nice and real Chinese food. It's like a fun night that is Sunday night. And then you can have another day to see the Chinese show at the City of Ames. February 23rd at the City Hall, we will have a performance from China, the professional performance.
Now, what is the date of that?
It will be 23rd. The poster is in the library. If you go to there, you will see the poster.
And anyone can go to any of these?
Anyone is open to the public.
Happy New Year, Happy New Year, Happy New Year to you all. We are singing, we are dancing, Happy New Year to you all.
Oh.
新年好呀, 新年好呀, 祝福大家新年好。
You have many people who are not Chinese who are learning Chinese.
Yes, Swedish, American background, and African-American, and Indian, and Turkey, and Middle East. It really doesn't matter you have Chinese background or not. They are all learning Chinese at Ames Chinese Academy for students from K to 8th grader. So basically, they are public school.
Public school for students.
Yes.
Yes. And do you learn spoken Chinese from the very beginning?
Yeah, and our school, yes.
And
we
your
teach
school.
Them from very beginning. It's a really big benefit for the people learning, you know, Chinese from very beginning. We are not only learning language, also the history, culture, so it's a lot.
Do you have some students who are native Chinese speakers who go to your school, or are these only beginning learners?
A majority is the Chinese background student, and still they are learning Chinese. And you know, it's more than that. It's the culture and how the older people thinking. So the language is like a tool, and if you know the cultural, if you know the traditional stuff, it will be easy to communicate with the people from that background.
That sounds like a lot. Very
yes.
Ambitious for grade school children.
Yeah, it's really a lot. Like dumpling, you look it's simple, but actually it's really a lot.
Do you know Daniel and Megan? Why are you learning Chinese?
You talk to Chinese people.
拜年了,祝您狗元旺旺旺。
And what does that mean?
Oh, so basically the first part says like, so this means like 拜年, which is like, hey, like wish for the new year and like good stuff to come to you. And the next year, and then the other part is like 祝您狗年, which means like we're in the dog year, wang wang wang.
Many thanks to Yingtao Wang, principal of the Ames Chinese Language Academy, and children of the academy, Daniel, Megan, Grace, James, Willow, and Amy for their Chinese New Year greeting. And thank you to Susan Franson for delivering this interview. The Chinese New Year will be celebrated for the next 15 days. There are two separate performances of the Chinese New Year celebration here locally in Ames on February 18th at the Great Hall, the Memorial Union, ISU students, and Ames Chinese Language Academy students will present performances. And then on February 23rd, at City Auditorium, a professional team from mainland China will present acrobatics, dance, magic, folk art, and other traditional Chinese arts. Tickets will be have to be reserved, and we'll post a link to that on our website at khoifm.org. I think it's from 7 to 9, but I'm not totally sure. If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Olympic figure skating is in full swing. Time is something that I personally love, or perhaps full spin would describe it more accurately. Among many stunning performances by individuals and couples, last night, Alyona Savchenko and Bruno Massat of Germany unexpectedly won the gold medal in pair skating with a powerful and passionate performance, which was a wonderful thing to see. Joan Gordon is an Ames resident who's been a figure skater judge for more than 40 years, as well as a skater herself. She had a conversation with me about skating and the world of judging figure skating, which I really enjoyed, and I wanted to share some of what she told me. I started out the conversation with a few questions I always have when watching this amazing Olympic art. How do you keep from getting dizzy?
Wow. You do get dizzy, but you maneuver your shoulders and arms and hips in ways to check, is the expression to use, is to come out of the jump.
There's this one jump where the woman is thrown up in the air and then she's kind of rolled like a log in the air and then caught again.
Right, the twist. And we're talking about the American pair skaters there. Yeah, that's their signature, and they really worked on that.
How do you practice jumps like that that are obviously so dangerous? With that jump, if you fell, you would break something.
Trampolines and off-ice experience and a good coach. You work up to it. First of all, you need the lift. You need to spring off the ice, and then you need the revolutions in the air, and then you need to be able to get the center of weight right over your skating foot so that you land. At first, the lifts are only waist high, and then they're chest high, and then they're over their heads for the pair skaters. For jumps on the ice itself, you can practice with a halter strapped situation. Somebody pulls to help you feel what it is like getting off the ice and making the revolutions in the air.
So the lift really has to do with speed, right, with momentum.
There's
leaving.
Speed, yeah. It's a combination of things. But, I mean, we're seeing the cream of the cream of the cream on when we were looking at the Olympics. One probably doesn't do that for the first maybe 10 years of skating.
Yeah. Okay, so last question. When somebody falls in the middle of a routine, how does that really affect the rest of your routine?
It doesn't matter if you fall sometimes. I mean, it disrupts a program and it takes away from the elegance and the continuity of it. And we have deductions for that.
But among skaters, is it seen as a big thing when somebody falls?
No, it's kind of so what in a way. And a lot depends upon whether it was in the execution of the jump itself or if it was some other reason why they fell. Maybe a bad spot on the ice or, I mean, there are other factors involved with it. But if they've landed it and not quite straightened up to hold the landing, we have a range of numbers that we can work with in terms of defining how bad a fall is. I think the audience is more mortified than the skaters themselves. Yeah. They're taking a risk. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Muscle memory and all the training that goes into it kind of gives you something to, you know, rely on when you're skating.
If somebody's in a routine and they fall,
I mean, they all are very good at picking themselves up very quickly.
The faster that, you get up, the better.
The better.
But catch up with that music.
But the muscle memory kicks in and you go back to where you were.
You pick up and go on to the next. I mean, everybody falls. Mm-hmm. That's just part of taking the risk, seeing what you're able to do, and then being able to react and clean it up. Find the level at which you can do it, because you're on just 2 inches of
steel,
of little thin metal blades.
You have been a judge for figure skating for how many years now?
42, since 75.
What's it like to judge figure skating?
I just love it. That's all I can say is I just love to see them achieve something. Mm-hmm. The height, the spring, the distance they get off the ground, the distance they traverse. There are two edges on a skate. There's an inside edge and an outside edge. All of jumping and spinning and everything has to have a basis, and that's a good, strong edge.
Those are the two sides of the blade?
Two sides of the blade, and you'll see people with pretty deep leans, great edges. I mean, everything is built on the edge. And then the other thing is keeping your center of gravity over your skating foot and just good posture all around.
Are you saying that when somebody leans really far onto either the inside or the outside of their skate, that's a good thing?
They really are. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you leave a flat track. The very first skating was our outside 8, skated on an edge. And you would strike out on your right foot if you just hold your edge, so to speak, and stay on it in the right position, you'll make a perfect circle. You come back to that center and you strike off on your other foot so that you're on the left foot and you skate another circle. And we would go out and look at that.
So the judges would literally go out
on
the
ice and look at it and see how the transition between the skating foot, that was all on the edge, would check that out.
Are judges today in the Olympics watching the foot
edge
of the skater?
Oh, yeah. The judges were very carefully watching the edges that the takeoff and then the landing. They're getting more and more refined and more defined, so to speak, as to what is perfection within every group. But I just want to encourage people to come out and skate and enjoy just being able to skate around the rink. There's got to be some joy in that for everybody. And you don't have to necessarily be the top skater to have that same enjoyment. Skating is such a free flying through. There's something very exhilarating about it. We were just in New York City this fall, and we went to an exhibition at one of the museums on the Museum Mile. I think it was the New York City Museum. And they had an exhibition of skating in New York from the late 1800s. And at one time, it was popular to have a small skating rink in a hotel, fancy dining room area. And I think in about the 20s and 30s, that was a big deal.
There's a skating club here in Ames.
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm. Ames Figure Skating Club. And they do have a website. It's for anybody interested in skating.
And the skating rink is where?
It's a gateway area of the city, just off Mortensen Drive, between Hayward and Welch.
Is it a good rink?
It's a good rink, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have a Zamboni?
Does have a Zamboni.
Drives around on the ice and smooths it out, right?
Before that, on natural rinks outdoors, it would have a barrel with water and sprinkle it and kind of spread the water around. This rink was built within the last 20 years.
And it's an indoor rink.
It's an indoor rink.
And it's year-round?
Parks and Rec provides a begin-to-skate program and lessons at the rink almost throughout the year, all except, I think, May they do a maintenance. Parks and Rec has a schedule that you can easily find either on their website or right at the door.
And are there skating competitions?
Yeah, there are. And there's a lot of local ones. And some of the skating competitions are for the more elite skaters. And as students progress in skating, there's levels, and they have to take an official exam to move up.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a number of elite people that have gone on and skated Disney on Ice and some of the others, and have themselves become coaches and produced people that have gone on to do the same thing.
How many Olympic skaters have we produced in Ames?
Lots of people in their minds.
Thank you so much, Joan.
Hey, yeah.
So is there somebody in particular that you're rooting for in the Olympics?
Oh, I root for them all.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Joan Gordon, for your thoughts on figure skating. Music you've been hearing is Arrival of the Birds, of the cinematic orchestra to which American athlete Adam Rippon played a joyous, or gave a joyous performance that made him the top trend on Twitter. Rippon said, "The Olympics are like so fun." Speaking of birds arriving, here is Patch Larbaum with the Backyard Bird Count.
From beginning bird watchers to experts, anyone can take part in the Great Backyard Bird Count, and you can participate from your backyard or anywhere in the world. The 21st annual Great Backyard Bird Count will be held Friday, February 16th through Monday, February 19th, 2018. Visit the official website at birdcount.org. That's bird count, all one word. Last year, more than 160,000 participants submitted their bird observations online, creating the largest instantaneous snapshot of global bird populations ever recorded. Phenology is recording nature's happenings on the date they occur. The day of a specific event are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's focus on phenology is the Great Backyard Bird Count, which is coordinated by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, or the Bird Lab. Every February, bird watchers are encouraged to count in your own backyard to help expand an understanding of birds. This is a great example how citizens become citizen scientists and contribute to a better understanding of our feathered friends, the birds at our feeders. The Great Backyard Bird Count is a fun and easy event that engages bird watchers of all ages in counting birds to create a real-time snapshot of bird populations. Participants are asked to count birds for as little as 15 minutes or as long as they wish on one or more days of the four-day event and report their sightings online at birdcount.org, birdcount.org. Each checklist submitted during the Great Backyard Bird Count helps researchers at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and the National Audubon Society learn more about how birds are doing and how to protect them and the environment we share. Bird populations are always shifting and changing. For example, in 2014, the Great Backyard Bird Count data highlighted a large eruption of snowy owls across the northeastern, mid-Atlantic, and Great Lakes areas of the United States. The data also showed the effects that warm weather patterns have had on bird movements around the country. For more on the results of the latest Great Backyard Bird Count, take a look at the GBBC summary. On the program website, participants can explore real-time maps and charts that show what others are reporting during and after the count. Be sure to check out the Explore a Region tool to get an idea of what you can expect to see in your area during the next Great Backyard Bird Count. And be sure to check out some of the images in the 2017 Great Backyard Bird Count Photo Contest Gallery. For questions and comments, please contact the National Audubon Society or the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And those websites will be listed on our website. Here's a message from Chief Scientist at the Cornell Lab. "This count is so fun because anyone can take part. We all learn and watch birds together. Whether you are an expert, novice, or feeder watcher, I'd like to invite new birders to join me and share the experience. Get involved, invite your friends, and see how your favorite spot stacks up." And that's from Gary Langham, Chief Scientist at the Cornell Bird Lab. The Great Backyard Bird Count is made possible in part by generous support from Wild Birds Unlimited. So visit your local Audubon Center and join a chapter, the Big Blue Stem Audubon here in Ames, or help save birds with your state program. It's happening even as we speak, and that's our phenology for the Great Backyard Bird Count going on today through Monday. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames.
Thank you, Pat, and this is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for being with us. Dr. Anthony Jones is Director of Student Services for the Ames Community School District, and he has joined us. Welcome, Dr. Jones.
Hi, good morning. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the services you oversee.
Well, I oversee, as you said, the director of student services. And I see pretty much, if I can summarize it, programs or work with students who are the outliers, I would say. So students who need a little more extra support. So I oversee the dropout prevention program, such as our alternative learning program at the high school. I also oversee our Title I and success programs in our elementary schools.
What is the Title I program?
Title I is a program that's federally funded from the government, and we typically work with elementary students who struggle with reading and math. And so we have an awesome team of teachers who work specifically with those students.
How do you identify a student? I mean, with the academic part, I think that's kind of clear that they just can't keep up. Mm-hmm. When you think about at-risk students, what really what defines an at-risk student, and how do you see what are the red flags that you see?
Yes. Well, one of the things we use a system. It's an early warning system to identify our at-risk students or students who may be falling through the cracks or who are struggling in schools. We use what we call EIS, which basically stands for Early Indicator Signs or Symptoms. And we look at what we refer to as the ABCs, the attendance, behaviors, their course completions, and their scores on our assessments. And so that's how we initially identify students.
And behavior, what does that mean?
Those who typically are suspended, whether it's in school or out of school, students who may struggle a little bit controlling themselves in the classroom. So we look at that data to see how often they're sent to the office, how often they are suspended, and we try to bring some support for those students there.
Mm-hmm. Is there any demographics associated with this? Or?
It all depends on the schools, but we typically try to use the EIS system because it helps us to stay consistent. But when we look at our demographics, especially, I mean, it's across the board, not just in Ames, but across the United States, typically you see students of color, students who have IEPs, so students who may be in special ed programs.
Those IEP students,
is? Is students who need special ed support, uh-huh, which is above and beyond what we provide for the at-risk programs. But you typically see a large number of students of color, students of low SES. And that's not just in Ames, but typically across the United States.
Is there an interpretation of what that means?
Of course. We try to provide professional development for our teachers, mm-hmm, to be able to recognize those disparities. Mm-hmm. And so what we begin to do is share with our teachers data to begin to look at how we identify behaviors, how we look at things culturally versus our own personal upbringings versus someone else's upbringing. And so we try to bring those type of trainings to our teachers to be able to recognize how do we identify students who have behavior problems. How do we identify students who may be struggling in class? Some of the things that's very interesting is that we know through providing cultural competency trainings for our teachers, begin to allow them to see if I grew up in Iowa and I may use certain examples to be able to expound on a lesson in class, then I need to be able to think about the students who are in my class and bring those cultural backgrounds into the class to be able to provide engagements for those students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up a child of an immigrant family, mm-hmm, and I didn't speak English when I was young even.
Yes.
And I have a little bit of a sense of what you're talking about because, mm-hmm, I didn't feel that I was part of the culture,
yes,
that I was in school with.
Yeah. Which mm-hmm is interesting because under the umbrella of student services, I also oversee our ESL program, which is our English as Second Language Learners. And so it's interesting, they're really not at-risk students, but the fact that they are in a predominantly culture that speaks English, mm-hmm, which automatically makes them
isolated,
at risk, mm-hmm, in our system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you working directly with students, or is your work mainly coordinating among the teachers themselves? Your program is something that is infrastructure for teachers. Am I understanding that?
Yes. I directly work more with teachers now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I typically oversee those programs, make sure that we are providing a sound budget for each school. I also make sure that I'm providing support for the building principals to be able to support our teachers, also being able to provide professional development for teachers in the building. So I don't get the opportunity as much as I would like to work mm-hmm. directly with students.
Students who are at risk, do they stay integrated with the other students in classes, or is there a separation?
We have a mixed approach. We've done a lot better over the years of paying attention to how we provide our programs and services for our students. 20, 30 years ago, and even 10, 15 years ago, you would walk into a school and you would definitely be able to see students who we label at-risk students segregated from the rest of the student population. But we've done a better job of making sure our students are integrated into the regular classrooms.
You find they do better that way?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about overseeing the at-risk programs, those are the things that I look for as a director, being able to be another set of eyes to walk through our building to be able to recognize those things.
Tell me some of your success stories.
Well, this is my first year. One of the things that we have done, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, is that we were struggling a little bit with our dropout. We were at 53% graduation rate for our African-American students.
That's very low.
Our previous director, Jonas Michaels, with his leadership, changed that. We were able to get the dropout rate from 53% to 88%. I think it was around about 88%. And to me, that's one of the success stories. Again, introducing how we identify at-risk students from using research-based approaches to be able to recognize its attendance, its behaviors, because if a student is not in class, that affects their learning. We suspend a student, they're not in class, it affects their learning. Mm-hmm. And so what this director began to do is say, okay, we have to remove ourselves from identified at-risk students based on our personal preferences of what we identify as students. And
right.
so we have to be able to look at consistently across the board from state to state, from district to district, consistently, where do we see the students struggle most is in those ABCs. And so one of the things he began to do is direct our teachers and our principals more to look at those identifications to be able to provide support for our students early. Another success.
And it paid off.
It absolutely paid off. Another thing is, I think a success for our programs is that we, and actually it's a hidden secret, we have some amazing partnerships with a lot of community agencies such as United Way of Story County, and we have some awesome programs that they're providing for our early readers. And so what we're finding out through research and through communicating with our parents is that the early we get books into our students' hands, the better they begin to do in school. And so we're not only looking at kindergarten through 12th grade, but we're also looking at our pre-K. We're also looking at from birth, from the time they're born, providing parents with books to be able to read to their babies as soon as they get them home. And so mm-hmm. we're finding some awesome things going on in the community with that. There are always areas of improvement. And so mm-hmm. what I'm doing now, especially being new to this position, I think it's always wise to walk slowly and just recognize those things that are well. And then you begin to pick up little things that comes to the surface. And so mm-hmm. that's the state that I'm in right now in this position.
Is this part of the school board's budget?
Yes. We get funds from the state. Mm-hmm. One set of funds is the dropout prevention. The second set of funds that we get from the state is our Title I. And so our district provides about 25% of the funds that's allocated to us. And so the majority of our funds are provided by federally funded mm-hmm. Programs. And mm-hmm. so our district comes in to support that from the general funds.
Mm-hmm. Before you leave, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about the events yesterday, since you work with young people and school systems.
Yes.
The tragic events in Florida with the school shooting. Have you felt the impact among the students or the administration here in Ames?
Yes.
And the many other events that have happened during this past year?
Yes. Regardless of where school shootings happens, it affects all of us that work in the education system. Even yesterday, we had an admin meeting, which we typically have on Thursdays, but that was the first conversation that we had, going over our emergency plans, making sure that we were all on the same page as far as how we provide training and how we do our different emergency plannings during the school year. So typically, we provide tornado drills and fire drills. Well, you know, it is said now that you're more likely to have a school shooting more than you will have a tornado or a fire in your school.
How about that?
And so we just had a quick conversation about recognizing that we need to make sure that we're paying attention to how we do our trainings and making sure staff is ready.
The school has plans for a situation like that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And is there anything that is said to the students at a time like this?
Yes, and our counselors, they do a great job. And one of the things that we try not to do is to create an atmosphere of anxiety. And so first priority is to try to make the day as normal as possible. And those students who tend to have more anxiety, we try to encourage them to come down and speak to our counselors. And so,
and do they do that?
Yes. We have students who takes advantage of that, but then we have students who use parent support to be able to provide that comfort and peace. And so,
can you generalize what is normally a concern of a, say, a junior high school student at a time like this?
Well, of course, is it going to happen at my school?
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough because, yeah, it's complex. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex situation. You know, a lot of things in the news is referring to how we need to have gun laws and different things like that. But it's such a complex situation. There's a very intense video that I saw a couple of days ago titled Evan. And the video is pretty much about a student trying to figure out a mystery person who's writing on the table. And the student is going through a regular day trying to figure out who this person keeps writing these notes back and forth. And so it's kind of like this flirtation thing going on between another person. And finally, the person finds out that it's another girl and they kind of have a little, nice little smile. Well, the video reverses and kind of walks back through the video that we watched, and it shows in the behind the scenes there's a student who is being bullied. There's a student who is isolated. There's a student who's on the computer looking up pictures of guns in that video, and it's about 2 to 3 minutes, and you never notice until they rewind it back.
Wow, yeah.
It's very chilling because it takes a very special adult and student to begin to recognize things that are behind the scenes.
You have to be observant.
You have to be observant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the things that we don't spend a lot of time on. Mm-hmm. But as administrators, we have to be able to remind our teachers and our students to be observant, to pay attention to those students who are isolated. Pay attention to those students who are sitting alone in the cafeteria. I worked in, you know, school system, and I know we do have students who sit alone. We do have students who are teased and picked on.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to encourage our adults and our students to be able to draw near to those students.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Speaking with Dr. Anthony Jones, Director of Student Services for the Ames Community School District. And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. A Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. And Local Talk was engineered very well today by Jackie Norman. And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as the audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. Thank you.